Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures. For more than 50 years, the museum has told stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character. Details at texancultures.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. This is a special edition of The Source. We're preempting Fronteras and Texas Matters to bring you the latest development on COVID-19. San Antonio, as you just heard in Steve Short's newscast, San Antonio has its first confirmed case of COVID-19, an individual who was traveling. This does not appear to be a community spread case. San Antonio Metropolitan Health District is asking folks not to gather in groups larger than 10 people unless it's necessary, and that's for people who are in a special high-risk category. Also this morning, it was announced that Fiesta has been postponed. Schools, local ISDs, they are set to return on Monday, but that could change, and we're covering that minute by minute. And so we're going to have the very latest on the coronavirus situation, and we're going to answer your questions. You can call in, leave a voicemail, 210-615-8982, 210-615-8982, email us at thesource@tpr.org. And so this morning, Mayor Ron Nuremberg signed a new public health emergency.
On March 2nd, I issued a declaration of public health emergency to give us tools to keep the federal quarantine contained. That declaration expired after 7 days. This travel-related case was confirmed late last night after we spent much of yesterday preparing a declaration of public health emergency to give our community the best defenses necessary in the event of community spread. So today I am also issuing a declaration of public health emergency.
This declaration comes after a local person tested positive for COVID-19. Here's Don Emmerich, the director of San Antonio Metropolitan Health, with more information.
This individual is in self-quarantine along with their family, and they are in stable condition. This person began showing symptoms earlier this month, tested positive for COVID-19 yesterday, March 12th. We learned of the positive result late last night and are currently conducting an extensive contact investigation of this person's history. We will continue to provide you information as we receive it.
Local health officials say San Antonio will see more cases of COVID-19. If you think you or someone in your family has the virus, they do not want you to show up at the ER. Here's Don Emmerich again explaining why.
The last thing I would say is I'm urging you, please do not go to the ER. Talk to your provider first. Everything that I just outlined, the ER is the last resort. Now, that sounds counterintuitive, but I'm going to tell you why. We need to protect our healthcare workers, front and center. And so when you go into an emergency room, you could possibly, and if you have symptoms and you don't know if you're positive or not, you could be exposing many, many, many of our healthcare workers. If our healthcare workers go down, this becomes a problem. So help us by following that protocol. Go to your providers first. Please do not show up at the ER.
So we're having this special edition of The Source today to answer your questions. We really want to drill down on practical, actionable questions you might have about how to deal with what is happening in San Antonio while also providing you with the very latest in developments. We're joined this hour by Joey Palacios. He covers local government for Texas Public Radio. Camille Phillips, our education reporter for TPR. Bonnie Petrie, our bioscience medical reporter for TPR. Also with us, Dr. Ruth Bergren, infectious diseases specialist and director of the Center for Medical Humanities and Ethics at UT Health San Antonio, and Tony Quesada, editor-in-chief for the San Antonio Business Journal. And first, I want to go to Joey Palacios, because we only have you for a few minutes, because we got to get you out of here to grind out more news about what's happening. But first, tell us about this press conference this morning. I guess it was a hastily called press conference to tell this big bombshell news.
Well, it was put together pretty quick. As the city noted, they got word that there was a positive case around 1 o'clock in the morning. And they did note that this was not related to the Lackland cohort, the folks that just arrived earlier this week, and that this is not necessarily a case of community spread. They said that this is a travel-related case. But they didn't give any more information as to where that travel was, how many people this person had been in contact with. They said that they are doing an epidemiological survey to see where this person has gone, who they've been in contact with. They did say, as noted in the quote a little bit ago, that this person is in isolation along with their family. And the city didn't exactly say how many people that is. So we are expecting more information to come out of the city as far as where this person may have gone, where they had come from, if they're a San Antonio resident. We're not even sure on that at the moment. The city did say something may come out later on, but we're waiting to see for more info.
I think it's interesting it didn't say international travel. They just said travel. And to me, that means they could have been at the Houston Rodeo. I mean, who knows?
It's possible.
They're not giving us that information. Or anything, perhaps, anything. Yeah. So, but first, also, Joy, the other big development today was Fiesta. Right. So what do we know about Fiesta?
So Fiesta has been postponed. This is the first time it is not going to occur in April since World War II. The new dates for Fiesta, at least for now, are April 5th through the 15th. And this is a pretty big adjustment for a lot of San Antonio's nonprofit organizations, because, you know, as a lot of people know, about 2.5 million people come into Fiesta, that there's more than $340 million that gets injected into the local economy. And for these nonprofits that put on these events, I mean, a lot of people may not know this, but with Fiesta, it is put on by more than 100 nonprofits. Each individual event is that nonprofit's own event, and they make a lot of money from these, like Oyster Bake, the Battle of Flowers Parade, from NYOSA. Each one benefits a different nonprofit.
Even the selling of medals, all these things
exactly.
Helps nonprofits. And so that was one of the reasons why they were reluctant to cancel it. They're hoping they can salvage it in November. Who knows what the situation will be in November. But, you know, they wanted to avoid what we call a super spreader event,
right,
where you can have one individual cheek to jowl in the middle of NYOSA in the line for churros. And next thing you know, you have multiple people who have been infected, exposed.
And you know, for a long time, or at least the last few, it feels like a long time, but at least for the past few days, we were wondering, you know, is Fiesta going to get canceled? And I don't think the reality of it being canceled fully hit until the rodeo in Houston was canceled. And last week when South by Southwest was canceled, that's when things got really real as far as
that was a big one. So let me ask you real quick, because we're short on time, about Sheriff Salazar's announcement. Things are changing at the courthouse. Things are happening at the jail. Real quick.
Right. So at the courthouse, jury duty is suspended. If you have a jury summons now, you don't have to show up, at least until mid-April, from my understanding. That's for 30 days. Then at that point, central jury staff is going to figure out what to do. But I was told by District Judge Peter Sakai that people can ignore their jury summons for right now. And that one of the things that Sheriff Salazar said is that he's going to be asking for judges to release people within the Bexar County Jail who are eligible for PR bonds, personal recognizance bonds. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that's going to happen, but part of the thinking is that they don't want to have too many people in the jail that could be at risk, that don't necessarily need to be there when there's up to 3,800, 4,000 people within the jail. So they want to kind of limit that close proximity. There are other measures that the sheriff's office may be saying later on what's going to happen, but they are going to start even maybe using discretion in some arrests and some parole cases.
Right. So I got to let you go, Joey. There's a lot more news to gather and to put together and to get on the air and also to get on our website at tpr.org. The weekend is coming up and the Texas Public Radio Newsroom is going to stay on top of this story. Our website, tpr.org, is where you can go to get the latest developments as they become available, particularly about schools. So we're going to be talking about what's happening with our school districts, ISDs, when we come back from the break. Also, the latest on nursing homes and hospitals, what's happening to the business community. And Dr. Ruth Bergeron is with us from the UT Health San Antonio to give us more information about what we should be thinking, how we should be feeling, how should we process this event. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to a special edition of The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're preempting Fronteras and Texas Matters this Friday in order to bring you the latest developments with the coronavirus. Did get an update from the San Antonio Water System. They want everyone to know that in the midst of the current anxiety about coronavirus, here in stores in San Antonio, they're seeing a rush on bottled water. SAWS wants to assure everyone that's not necessary. There's going to be plenty of water. Water provided by SAWS, it will always be coming out of your faucet. It will be reliable and safe. And now, as it's always been, so running to the store, buying big packets of water, that's not necessary. Probably a lot of things people are doing along those lines, like buying toilet paper in bulk, that's not necessary. On Monday, we do have HEB joining us to talk about their supply chain and how they're doing their process. And they source a lot of what they produce in Texas. That's one of the big ideas behind HEB. So you really don't have to worry much about them running out of things and not being able to resupply. And these bulk buys are not necessary. But Bonnie Petrie, bioscience medical reporter for Texas Public Radio, you have been seeing this firsthand. People have been, they're in a state.
They are. I mean, I'm a citizen of San Antonio as well. So just going around the city, you can see that people are stressed and sort of in a state. I shared a picture the other day from my HEB on Wurzbach with no hand sanitizer or hand soap, except for lava. So for some reason, people don't want lava, even if it'll save them in a pandemic. But there you go. We don't need to be stocking up like this. But I think it's more indicative that people are being more conscientious about washing their hands more. And so they'll just need some more soap.
It's to the uncertainty that we're having right now. But we do have some new rules that are coming to effect to provide some certainty at nursing homes.
Right.
What do we need to know?
It's really fluid right now in Texas. So if you watched the president speak the other night, he suggested that they bar visitors from nursing homes. And then the next day, New York's governor, Andrew Cuomo, did mandate that there would be no visitors in nursing homes in Texas.
So this is non-medically necessary visitors.
Right.
Basically
right.
Family visits.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. And so in Texas, that sort of mandate hasn't come down yet. So it's sort of on a case-by-case basis.
And it could change because?
It could change. The governor's speaking today. So, you know.
Right now.
Yeah. So.
Right. And we're monitoring that. We'll bring you the information as it becomes available.
Right.
So we have a breaking news, though, right from that. Governor Abbott to declare a coronavirus statewide public health disaster. He's doing that at a press conference right now. And that does a lot prevents price gouging. It allows the schools to take special action. So let me go over to Camille Phillips, our education reporter. We've seen that when there is a disaster declared by the governor, that schools are able to work with their attendance policy a lot more flexible.
Yes, the Texas Education Agency has already been in communication with school districts saying that they will allot waivers. They will allow for attendance cushions, that kind of thing.
Well, typically schools are funded on their attendance.
Correct.
So when they see a big drop in attendance, then, you know, they see a big drop in their budget. When there's a hurricane that we see, and then kids can't go to school for sometimes months at a time, they provide special waivers for
that.
They
do, yes. And so I expect that to happen.
If we have school districts who, and we're still waiting for the final word, what they're going to be doing locally, but we know some across the state have already done that, they have extended spring break indefinitely. And so this provides them the flexibility to not worry so much about the loss of funding because of attendance. So this is a break for them.
Yes, there will probably be cushion, like I said, for that. But there are other considerations that districts have to think about, especially in San Antonio, where we have a lot of kids that rely on free and reduced price lunch to have a meal in the day. And so without school, then districts have to think of another way to make sure the kids aren't hungry. That's one outstanding question I really have for districts. If they do announce later today that they close, what are they going to do for these kids? There's also childcare, right? A lot of parents can't just on a dime not go to work. They have to pay their rent. So there are outstanding questions. Also, the internet, digital divide. They're saying if you want to go online and do learning that way, a lot of families don't have internet.
All right, I'm going to play voicemail that we got about that issue.
My mom's a teacher at Northeast Independent School District, and I was really worried about her going back because I am an automotive college student and I'm not actually going to school next week. So I was wondering why some school districts are canceling and others aren't, and should we be worried?
The teachers also are in the dark too. That's also a problem in staff. They're waiting for word to come But so talk about, we're also the higher education institutions. So a lot of our college campuses locally, are they've canceled classes. They're going online.
Yes. First of all, I want to say I do expect announcements from area school districts by the end of the day. Today, multiple districts have already said that they will announce something by the end of the day. District superintendents are meeting shortly to discuss coronavirus. We may even have some result from the governor, right? Districts might act because of the governor's announcement. That said, right now, there's only a few private schools that have announced closures. Most, almost all colleges in the area have extended spring break by a week. Most are planning to move classes online for at least a couple of weeks.
We will be following this all weekend long. We will be updating our website as it becomes available at tpr.org. You're not going to be bombarded with a bunch of annoying pop-ups and things that won't load. It's a pretty simple, straightforward website, and you can count on the very latest. All of us are going to be working around the clock over the weekend to bring you that information. So let me go over to Dr. Ruth Berggren, infectious diseases specialist and director of the Center for Medical Humanities and Ethics at UT Health San Antonio. Really want to focus on actionable, practical information about what people can do to protect themselves and their family members and going forward. What do you want people to know?
Well, the very first thing I want to say to San Antonio is please stop shaking each other's hand. Just this morning, I had the occasion to meet with a number of professionals in the city of San Antonio, and everybody stuck their hands out to greet me, whereupon I responded by putting my hand over my heart and giving a gentle bow with a smile. And I know that the messages about washing your hands have gotten out there. Everybody can recite that you have to wash your hands for 20 seconds using soap and water, sing happy birthday twice, or use hand sanitizer with 60% or more of alcohol. Everybody knows that, but everybody is still shaking each other's hands. Stop shaking hands. That's a good way to transmit virus. And when you do that, you're not being antisocial. You are being pro-social. You're showing your humanity and you're caring for your fellow human being by not touching one another.
So that's number one. Stop skin contact with individuals, handshake or hugs or whatever else you might be going on with. That's got to stop. And social distance. I hear about social... But the distance is, I mean, we're probably too close.
And 6 feet. And I,
yeah,
we want to be 6 feet apart, ideally. That's kind of hard to do in even small social gatherings like we have five of us sitting around here. But there is a basis for that. It's not invented. I mean, we actually have information from airplanes that, you know, the people that are two rows ahead or two rows behind are in the zone of a potential transmission for coronavirus, but beyond that, they're okay. So social distancing is an evidence-based way of decreasing your risk. But what else that means for us practically is avoiding gatherings that are not necessary. And this might be tough for some people to really want to deal with, but going to church is an example of where you have large groups of people coming together, frequently older people. The folks that are over 60 are vulnerable.
So we do have breaking news. Governor Abbott officially declares statewide emergency and announced that a drive-through coronavirus testing station will be set up starting today in San Antonio. So we're going to get the details on that, and we will be there as that develops. Bonnie? She's taking notes, you know, and everyone else. But this is the big news. We have been waiting for this. They've had stations like this set up in other states like Colorado, I know, and around the world. And mm-hmm. So now we're catching up. But we've had less than 2,000 coronavirus tests so far in the state of Texas up until this point. So Dr. Ruth Berggren, if you could kind of react to that.
Yeah, so I'm aware that our UT Health Science Center is collaborating with STRAC and Metro Health to develop a new mobile capability to take care of testing and care. The idea was that first responders and healthcare workers would be prioritized. So we don't want the entire city of San Antonio at this moment to get in line and go drive through for a test just because it might make them feel better. This is still a precious resource, and we need to deploy it in a way that's rational.
Okay, Bronnie.
I have been wondering about this because we've talked a bit about how we need people to test so we can have more information, so we can make better decisions as we move through this period. However, we don't want people to go to their doctor's office or emergency rooms unless they really need care. So something like this, a mobile testing clinic, might be the ideal way to go. So if we are testing, understandably and rightfully, these precious resources of first responders first, then what for the rest of us who are wanting to do the right thing?
Well, so I think we need to focus on people who have symptoms that are compatible with the disease, right? So it would be people that actually have fever, and fever is defined as a temperature of greater than 100.4 degrees Fahrenheit, a dry cough, and feeling sick, but not just a runny nose.
But we know people can shed the virus before they even have any symptoms like that.
Yes, but imagine how we overwhelm our system and waste our tests if we don't have some order to who's getting tested.
Particularly right now when we're starting this movement. Let me go to Tony Quesada. He's editor-in-chief for the San Antonio Business Journal. We're seeing this ripping through our economy, disrupting people. What are you seeing? What are you reporting on?
Well, you can look at our publicly traded companies in San Antonio as a microcosm. They are following the same trends as the rest of the publicly traded companies in terms of where people's fears are and taking their money out of the market, the capital markets. So that's one thing you can look at. The other thing you can look at is kind of just the walking around impact. As many of us drove here today to your office, the streets are empty. A lot of it's because of spring break, but a lot of it's because people are sending their business, their people home.
The loss of Fiesta.
Yeah, there's that. But the you look at companies like Rackspace, which has implemented work from home on a large scale, and then just tons of smaller companies are doing it too. So you're going to see that. A big thing is going to be when you see schools actually do close. Because then you're going to see people who are forced to stay home, whether or not they are getting paid. So incomes will be affected. How much people can buy will be affected. Where you can get stuff will be affected. A manufacturing company, for example, can't have its people work from home. So they're going to try to get their people in as best they can, but their supply chains are being affected. So their productivity as manufacturers is going to go down. So you're going to see just throughout the city kind of a ripple effect. All these events that people have that are business-related, networking events of all types is just – we don't know where it's going to stop. And the other thing about it is it's not like it's just here. It's in every state. All the states are starting to do the same thing that Governor Abbott just did. You're going to see all the states doing that. So where do you go to for help? When Harvey hit Houston, we all funneled our help into Houston.
Sure.
We came to Houston's aid. But who's going to come to the aid? I mean, we're not going to go to Europe for help, right?
And with hurricanes, you have a sense of what the timeline might look like, what
exactly
recovery might look like.
This is all the unknown.
And this is uncharted.
This is all the unknown. And that's what's making people who run businesses, particularly consumer-facing businesses, very nervous. But even the business to business companies, they're eventually in the chain. The way money flows, it's eventually going to hurt all businesses.
So we have to think about what's going to be done for individuals, extension of the unemployment insurance. Maybe right now there's a scheduled cut to food stamps that is scheduled for April the 1st. Is that going to go forward? That's something that's being discussed right now in Washington, D.C. It could be ill-timed. But we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We want to answer these questions that people have about the way that they should conduct themselves right now. Simple questions, stuff you never would think about. You know, we're going to get these on the air. They make sense because people are nervous, they're uncertain, they need solid information. We have Dr. Ruth Bergen here this afternoon to help us figure all this out, and our top-notch reporters, and Tony Quesada from the San Antonio Business Journal. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast comes from Sunshine Cottage's Noche del Sol, a fiesta kickoff event with Mexican food, entertainment, and deloritas, plus a raffle and auctions to benefit the School for Deaf Children, March 26th, 6 p.m. More at sunshinecottage.org.
San Antonio poet laureate Octavio Quintanilla was raised in Mexico. He came back to South Texas as a child. The displacement not only uprooted him physically, but verbally and culturally.
For me, writing is about loss because I'm trying to recover everything I've lost through writing.
A conversation with Octavio Quintanilla, next time on Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
You're listening to a special edition of The Source on Texas Public Radio. Normally on Fridays, you're hearing Fronteras and Texas Matters. Due to developments with the coronavirus, we are having a special live program with you, with our reporters, and also some experts in the field to talk about what you need to know about. We're trying to focus on actionable information, things that you really need to know that's going to impact your life, because everything is being disrupted right now. I know when we're going to break, you wanted to bring up a special point, Dr. Ruth Bergen. What did you want us to know?
Yes, I think it's important that people understand the flu is still circulating and it's not too late to get a flu shot. And that is something that's proactive. We're all feeling the stress, thinking through the consequences of what COVID-19 means for us. Let's channel some of that energy into doing things that we can do that make a difference. And how does getting a flu shot make a difference? It is not going to protect you against COVID-19, but it will protect you against the flu, which means that you won't have a fever and you won't be burdening the healthcare system by coming in with your influenza fever to get tested for COVID-19.
Okay, I'm going to air a voicemail. This is from Judy.
Hi, I have two questions. I'm wondering if it's safe to use the washers and the dryers in the condo complex that I live in. There's pretty much heavy use. What precautions, if any? And also, vinyl gloves. I haven't been able to find any hand sanitizer. Are vinyl gloves helpful in that respect, for that purpose? You know, the throwaway gloves.
So, Dr. Bergen?
So, there shouldn't be a problem with using the washer and dryer per se. But if it's a high-touch surface area that multiple people are using, what you might want to do is wipe down that surface with the household spray that you're using to clean your kitchen counter. Ideally, it would be something that has bleach in it. But that's really, I think, more important than gloves. There's not something... If you have gloves and you want to use them, that's fine. They might help you remember not to be touching your face so often. But really, the issue is any high-touch surface area, including, for instance, the countertops at banks where lots of people go, those should be wiped down on a regular basis.
All right. I want to go back over to Camille Phillips, our education reporter at Texas Public Radio, because I think people are really trying to figure out what to do on Monday morning. Do I take my child to school? And if I do that, how do I do that? What do I do to protect my child and my family? When do I dip my child in bleach when they come home? What do I do?
I mean, I think at first and foremost, at the end of the day, it's your decision. You're the parent. But I think also listen to your local authorities and see what their advice is. And it might be a moot point. I mean, we very well could have all our school districts announce closures by the end of today.
That is a good question, though.
Bonnie Petrie.
Kids are grubby. I have one. So if the kids do go to school, what
she's
do you do?
She's not grubby.
She's a little grubby. What do you do? What do you do with your kid when they get home? And younger ones are more grubby than older ones.
You know, I think it's really important to talk to the children. I want to start with that message first, because children will be absorbing all the anxiety and the stress of the adults. And so we have to have open conversations with them and teach them about washing their hands. And that's something that a kid can understand really well. Your kid can be the one that's reminding you not to go shaking hands with people. So, of course, if they're grubby, you're going to bathe them. But children, we know that children can learn behaviors like hand washing, and they can actually be very good promoters of hand washing.
I think probably that's good, because kids are pretty anxious right now about all this big world stuff going on, and that gives them something practical to do. Like, it's their job to tell mom to wash their hands. It's
exactly
their job to tell
idea.
Mom not
exactly.
to.
Exactly. That's a positive thing. And also, by the way, it's not predominantly the children that are at risk for having bad consequences. It's the older folks, people over the age of 60, people with underlying medical problems such as chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, coronary artery disease, diabetes, or people that have had organ transplants. Those are the folks that are really at risk for having bad consequences, the odds are that a child would get a bad cold, a cough, maybe a fever, but not wind up with dire consequences. And we can legitimately tell our children this, and it can be very reassuring.
But other areas, it seems like I'm hearing all sorts of people who could be at risk that we're not really thinking about. If you're a heavy smoker, if you're a vapor, we remember not that long ago we were talking about how vaping was killing everybody. But that certainly does a number on your lungs. And this is a respiratory infection type thing. And if you have something like lupus, then you may have a compromised immunity. I mean, there's all sorts of people out there that we need to be thinking about.
Absolutely. And again, the best way for us to channel the energy and our concern for them is in changing our own behavior and washing our hands and social distancing.
All right. So I'm going to play this email, a voicemail here from about St. Patrick's.
Good morning. I am calling to express my alarm and concern that the St. Patrick's Day Parade, River Parade, is going to be going on, as well as the Tejano Awards Festival in this environment with the COVID-19. I thought Mayor Nuremberg had said that large gatherings were to be canceled. Thank you.
All right, so to the latest on that, the city of San Antonio has officially canceled the Tejano Music Awards Fan Fair and the St. Patrick's Day Festival and River Parade. That is not going to happen. Because of the risk of the rapid spread of the virus, all indoor public and private gatherings and outdoor gatherings within an enclosed space of 500 persons or more anywhere are canceled for the next 7 days. So I'm going to go over to Tony Quesada to talk about, he's the editor-in-chief for the San Antonio Business Journal. What does this do for somebody? You know, these people, they set up booths, they invested in hamburger patties and quesadillas and all sorts of good things. Now they have no one to eat them, to buy them.
So our sister paper, the Austin Business Journal, did a very thorough piece this week, published and it's also on our site. You can find it on sanantoniobusinessjournal.com. About the fallout from the cancellation of South by Southwest. And it's very instructive of the kinds of things we can expect to see from canceling such a major thing that had so many small vendors rely upon it. And you're going to see insurance claims, which may or may not be honored. You're going to see some people get litigious with each other. You're going to see bankruptcy filings. There was a part of that piece that talks about the concept of force majeure, which is going to become something a lot of people
say that again. The what?
Force majeure.
Act of God.
Something that's totally out of your control that affects your business and whether or not your business insurance covers that and whether or not it will be honored. So you're going to look at these insurance company. The insurance industry is certainly worried what is going to be the impact on their bottom lines. So I think that's the big answer to your question is we still don't know, but there are some signs as to where this is all going. Part of it's going to court. Part of it's going to bankruptcy. Hopefully, a lot of people will work it out together and they'll find some way to make people at least partially restored. I don't think there's a hope that your people are going to be made whole, but at least if people, you know, we are all in this together. And I think you take that approach, hopefully, in a town like San Antonio, that is a very small town environment, and people do care about each other, even the people they do business with, that you would hope that happens.
All right, Dr. Ruth Bergen.
I want to pick up on your comment because back when I was in Charity Hospital after Hurricane Katrina, stuck there for 7 days in rather dire situations, the thing that we said to one another like a mantra was, we may not be able to control what's happening to us, but we can control how we treat one another. And I think what I heard you saying was that we have opportunities to make decisions. People in positions of leadership in businesses have an opportunity
Absolutely.
To make decisions where we are treating one another with empathy, with compassion. People who are sick need not to be demonized, and we need to think about how can we help our community get through this together. And there's very proactive things that people in leadership and business can do.
So I want to ask you about best practices for someone who decides that they're going to self-quarantine or be in isolation for a while. They may have come in contact with somebody or think they're at risk for one reason or another. How do you do that? What's a good way to self-quarantine?
So with self-quarantine, first of all, you want to make sure you have what you need. So you're really doing the quarantine. That means you're not running to the grocery store every day. You're staying home. Well, look around your pantry. Make sure you have the stuff that you need so that you could stay put for 14 days. Make sure that you have the medications that you need. If you're somebody who takes prescription medicines, now is a really good time to make sure your prescriptions are up to date. Call in now to make sure your doctor renews your prescriptions. And if your insurance permits it, why not get a 90-day supply? I've found this in other disaster situations that folks who have chronic illness, who rely on prescription medication, when they get separated from those meds, and that can compound the health crisis in a community.
But that speaks to people who have the means to do that. They're going to have, if you have enough, a lot of people live paycheck to paycheck, and the pantry can last, you know, a week. And they're already rationing their meds because they don't have enough to go around. What do we do for folks like that?
Well, I think that there's some wonderful things going on in the community of San Antonio, and I don't have details, but I'm aware that the food bank, for instance, is initiating some programs to make sure that people who need to have a 14-day supply of food will be able to have it.
And yeah, we were going to have the food bank on Monday to get the latest developments on that. But, you know, and the food bank is going to be doing everything they can to make sure they're not a super spreader.
Right.
And Bonnie?
There are people in the middle of food bank clients and people that can easily refill their pantries over and over again. What do those people do?
Well, that's where we can think creatively, right? I mean, people are members of congregations of various kinds. The faith community has a long track record of stepping up when there is need, and there are ways of doing that that can minimize too much contact between people. So we have a food bank.
I'm hearing from you is we have to find a way to make connections with each other as a community during this time.
I think that would be a great
idea. And check on your neighbors, maybe have some distant relatives locally, maybe you don't keep in contact with, but check up on them. We got to take this last break for the hour. When we come back, we've got some emails and other voicemails to get to. We want to talk about what this looks like and how you can identify it. If you need to stay home, what do you do to yourself to help you get better if you can? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're going to be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the coronavirus in the special edition of The Source. We're preempting Fronteras and Texas Matters due to the rapid developments in this situation. We have another voicemail. Let's get that on the air.
Hi. My question is, how are the public schools in San Antonio prepared to handle the recommendations of the mayor and the CDC for social distancing? Why are San Antonio Public Schools staying open when they know that thousands of San Antonio area students have recently returned from going on cruises, traveling around the country, and internationally for spring break?
Okay.
School closures seem to be the key to flattening the curve, the outbreak in San Antonio. Thank you.
All right. There's a lot there. We'll get to flattening the curve and explaining what that means. And that's why we're taking all of these actions, is why Fiesta's been postponed to November. That's why the St. Patrick's Day events and the and Tejano Fan Fest have been canceled. We don't want to have super spreader events where we have so many people getting infected all at once and overwhelming the system. But to the voicemail was about people coming home. My daughter right now, she was in Ireland. She just flew in just like an hour ago and landed in New Jersey. And it contacted me and I asked her about how did they screen you? How did they test you once you landed back in the United States? She says there was none. She wasn't asked any questions. She wasn't screened. What they didn't take her temperature with a little forehead gun, you know. How is that surprise you, Dr. Bergren?
Well, She's coming from Ireland. She's not coming from China. They're having outbreaks in Ireland. But there are, you can go to the CDC's website and you can see maps that are documenting which countries are the hot spots and which ones that aren't. And so I think that it becomes a logistical question of how do you deploy all of these measures all at once? And so it's a matter of degree. And so we want to focus our efforts where the risk is the greatest.
Okay, now to the question from the caller about schools, Camille Phillips.
I think, again, I can only speculate because I haven't been able to talk to school districts. They have been kind of silent for the last 2 days.
Well, they're having meetings.
But they are having meetings. They're meeting shortly this afternoon. So I would say that they may very well decide to close. And again, like I said earlier, there are very real like pain points on both sides. The last thing they would want to do is create, you know, spread of virus, but they also have to consider their students and plan how to continue to feed them and that kind of thing. So I would say just wait and see. We'll have an announcement later today. Also, in the meantime, I would recommend talking to your kids about the virus because they are hearing about it. They are they're aware. If you're stressed, they want to know what's going on. So it's better to talk. And NPR education team has a comic that helps you talk about it at their level in a non-threatening way.
And one thing that San Antonio has been trying to do to slow down spreads, not just of COVID, 19, but of all, infectious diseases, is having paid sick leave. And San Antonio has not been able to get that moving forward. Tony Quesada, if you could talk about that. You're the editor-in-chief for the San Antonio Business Journal. That's been a friction point for the city.
Well, the paid sick leave ordinance that the city passed, first of all, it was done as the city council was facing the option of doing a referendum and putting that before the voters, and so they circumvented that by passing the ordinance that was being urged through a referendum. Then there was litigation that followed that as the state and other entities sued them, and basically what it comes down to is the legal argument that the state constitution, in concert with laws governing wage and earnings, says that municipalities don't have the authority. That is something that is vested in the state. That's the legal theory. And that so far has prevailed at all levels.
So it's locked into courts in Texas, but they are talking about this in Washington, D.C., as some sort of maybe national, maybe limited time paid sick leave, that the federal government would pick up the tab for that. But Dr. Ruth, could you explain why paid sick leave is a way to limit the spread of a infectious disease? And if it's good for the coronavirus, why isn't it good for the flu and other things we have all the time?
Okay, well, the second question is a matter of debate. Flu and corona are different.
They're different.
Influenza does not have nearly the mortality rate that we're seeing with coronavirus. So that's
their community spread.
Right. Yes. The idea is that people go to work when sick because they can't afford not to.
Right. Right. So if you make it easier for people to do the right thing being stay home when you're sick, then you'll have fewer cases. And you will accomplish this thing that we're calling flattening the curve.
So to the point about the flu being a whole different type of deal, and we got a lot of emails asking about that, really help us understand that. Why is that? Why can't I treat this like the flu? To me, it's like I feel icky.
So it's just a matter of how the coronavirus differs than flu in how it affects the body. And we don't know exactly right now who's going to be most affected. We can tell you certain things like people over the age of 60, people with underlying comorbidities. By this, I mean lung disease, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, coronary artery disease, diabetes. Those people, when they get the COVID, they have a higher risk of having a severe illness that requires medical attention, that requires oxygen support, and some of them are going to need to be intubated and some of them will die. And that is a fluctuating percentage based on the information we're getting, but people are quoting as high as a 3.4% mortality rate. Influenza, we have much better data over many, many decades, and the mortality rate is only 0.1%. So that's the big difference.
A question from an email. Should families plan funerals for their loved ones, or how should we deal with that? I mean, I lost a tia this week, and you know, how do we get together and honor her?
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that. And I also lost a Tia literally last week. And our family is making plans to honor her at the end of May. So we're postponing. We're interacting with one another virtually and exchanging cards and condolences, but deferring the time when people get together as a group for several months hence.
Bonnie Petrie?
First, I'm so sorry, both of you. And that's why we want to flatten the curve, right? So everybody on Facebook, and because I'm old, I'm on Facebook, but my daughter's on Reddit and Instagram. It's everywhere, this chart, which has the two curves, the big mountain and the little hill. And flattening the curve is about hospital capacity, right? If we don't flatten the curve, what could happen?
Right. So just to flesh it out a little bit more for people who haven't
seen
it.
Think visually for one second.
Think visually about a grid, and you have an x-axis and a y-axis, and on your x-axis you have time, and on your y-axis you have the number of cases. And so the big curve is in a short period of time you get a bunch of cases. And the other curve that looks like a smaller mountain is that over a more prolonged period of time you have maybe almost the same number of cases, but you don't see that big peak. And so all of these measures about social distancing and keeping people at home because they have sick leave, these are all going to help us move from the big curve to the one that's more not as tall and is spread out over time. Think about it. When people are sick and they come to the hospital, a certain percentage of them are going to need to go to the intensive care unit. And our intensive care unit is already full on a good day. Now we suddenly have a surge of people who are sick with COVID-19. The more of them you have, the bigger the problem. And you're now going to be stressing the system, not only in terms of hospital beds, but actually in terms of ventilators. When you see that big first curve, what that means to us in the healthcare professions is, yikes, we might have to start making really dire decisions about who gets put on a ventilator and who doesn't. We really don't want to be in that situation. And we do understand that telling people to wash their hands isn't going to prevent the virus from arriving in our community, but it sure does slow the spread. And everything we can do to slow the spread will prevent that kind of dire situation where we have critical needs to put people on ventilators and we just can't meet the need. We don't want to be there.
Where do you think we're going to be in a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
So I think the answer to that question can be derived by looking at what's happening in states that are ahead of us. And so I believe that we will see quite a few more cases in San Antonio. I am an optimist. I believe that in San Antonio we can listen to each other, help each other flatten the curve. I think we'll see more cases. But if we want to flatten the curve, we have to get with the program. And right now, today, people, stop shaking each other's hands. Put it into practice now.
Some people are saying what Italy is experiencing now is where we could be in 3 or 4 weeks or sooner.
So, of course, that could be the case. I think that Italy didn't have a chance to think as long or hard as we have had about how to flatten that curve. And so I want to be an optimist, and I want to believe that if we put all these measures in place, that things are not going to be as dire here as they are in Italy. That is still a possibility, but it requires each and every person in the city of San Antonio to get on board with it.
Tony Quesada, if you could talk about, you're the editor-in-chief of the Business Journal, what do you think the long-term implications are for San Antonio's business environment?
I think it's going to be depressing. And it's going to be, at this point, difficult to see where the resources are going to come, financial resources are going to come to make businesses that are going to experience lost revenue whole. There's going to be a new paradigm, at least for the foreseeable future, about people's business models, particularly if they're heavily consumer-facing or if they're based on gatherings of large peoples. As well as the manufacturing industry that relies on long supply chains coming from other countries that are being affected by all of this, the business insurance industry is going to be affected, and the small businesses are petrified. because they have so few resources and they live day to day with
small and so we margins. Know that the federal government is talking about providing small business loans and relief, and we'll get the latest information about that when it becomes available. Really quickly, as we wrap up, Camille Phillips, education reporter, you're going to stay on top of this. You're going to update our website, tpr.org. You're going to be, you have your contacts. You know, how's it looking?
Yes, I will be following up. I will be emailing and calling and all of that this afternoon, and I will update our website and our social media.
Our website will be updated all weekend long, tpr.org. Our newsroom team is working really hard to bring you the most up-to-date, actionable, practical information about what's happening. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by Ruben Garcia. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.
Monday at noon on The Source, the coronavirus outbreak has resulted in panic buying at area stores. We're joined by HEB to hear about how they have plenty of goods, sanitizers, toilet paper, other products in the supply chain, and there's no need to clean out the stores. You can call in with questions, 210-615-8982. Leave a voicemail. That's on The Source, Monday at noon on Texas Public Radio.